Hello and welcome to Azo Nano News for the week commencing the 12th of May 2008, brought to you by azonano.com. My name is Stuart Cameron. In this edition of Azo Nano News, as well as bringing you the latest news from the international nanotechnology industry, we'll hear about nanoworms that are designed to ride the bloodstream in search of cancer cells, how nanotechnology is helping to measure just how hot your chili really is, and how scientists are making chips more reliable by melting them. In this week's Azo Nano interview, Cameron Chire speaks with Colin Raston about work they're doing at the Centre for Strategic Nanofabrication, incorporating toxicology. These stories and more in this edition of Azo Nano News. Scientists at UC San Diego, UC Santa Barbara and MIT have developed nanometer-sized nanoworms that can cruise through the bloodstream without significant interference from the body's immune defense system and, like tiny anti-cancer missiles, home in on tumors. Their discovery, detailed in this week's issue of the Journal of Advanced Materials, is reminiscent of the 1966 science fiction movie The Fantastic Voyage, in which a submarine is shrunken to microscopic dimensions, then injected into the bloodstream to remove a blood clot from a diplomat's brain. Using nanoworms, doctors should eventually be able to target and reveal the location of developing tumours that are too small to be detected by conventional methods. Carrying payloads targeted to specific features on tumours, these microscopic vehicles could also one day provide the means to more effectively deliver toxic anti-cancer drugs to these tumours in high concentrations without negatively impacting other parts of the body. If you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen and into the lab. Chemists can now use carbon nanotubes to judge the heat of chili sauces. The technology might soon be available commercially as a cheap disposable sensor for use in the food industry. Richard Compton and his team at Oxford University, UK, have developed a sensitive technique to measure the levels of the substances that make chilies hot in samples of chili sauce. The current industry procedure is to use a panel of taste testers and is highly subjective. Compton's new method unambiguously determines the precise amount of these substances, and it's not only quicker and cheaper than taste testers, but more reliable for purposes of food standards. Tests could be carried out rapidly on the production line. They tested a range of chili sauces from the mild Tabasco green pepper sauce to Mad Dog's Revenge, which sports an extensive health warning and liability disclaimer. Analysis and diagnosis in a chip format are coming of age, but their practical application has been limited because until now, the sample usually had to be prepared separately and on a non-miniaturized scale. Jürgen Pipper and his team at the Institute of Bioengineering and Nanotechnology in Singapore want to change this. They've now developed a rapid test for genetic diagnosis that combines the preparation of biological samples with a polymerase chain reaction on one chip. This laboratory device for all steps in this system is a single drop containing magnetic nanoparticles, which is moved across the chip by a magnetic field. Polymerase chain reaction allows gene sequences to be duplicated and identified, to identify a disease trigger, for example. In this process, the sample must cycle through a specific sequence of temperatures. Because of the slow heating and cooling processes, laboratory PCR usually takes several hours. The new chip PCR requires only minutes, including the time taken for the sample preparation. Carbon nanotubes' potential as a supermaterial is blighted by the fact that when first made, they often take the form of an unprepossessing pile of sooty black mess in the bottom of a test tube. Now researchers at the University of Warwick's Department of Chemistry have found a way of producing carbon nanotubes in which they instantly form a highly sensitive ready-made electric circuit. The research has just been published in a paper entitled Single-Walled Carbon Nanotube Network Ultra-Microelectrodes by University of Warwick researchers. The researchers used a form of chemical vapor deposition and lithography to create the ready-made single-disc-shaped single-walled carbon nanotube-based ultra-microelectrodes. The nanotubes deposit themselves flat on a surface in a random but relatively even manner. They also overlap sufficiently to create a single complete metallic microcircuit right across the final disc. What's even more impressive is that they take up less than 1% of the surface area of the disc. Minerva Biotechnology, a leading nanotechnology cancer and stem cell development company, today announced a major breakthrough in a cancer target that is widely expressed in human cancers. Minerva used its proprietary nanoparticle technology to elucidate a key molecular mechanism that's involved in cancer cell growth and metastasis. The study focuses on a cell surface receptor called MUC1, which according to extensive scientific literature is aberrantly expressed on 75% of all human solid tumours, 96% of breast cancers, 47% of prostate cancers, as well as high percentages of ovarian, colorectal, non-small cell lung and pancreatic cancers. Circulating MUC1 is currently used as a diagnostic marker for breast cancer, and overexpression also has been shown by many studies to be correlated with poor clinical outcome. This new discovery may also lead to better diagnostics. In collaboration with a leading diagnostic reference lab in California, Minerva has shown that MUC1 is expressed to much higher levels in a variety of human tumour tissues and in the future could provide both diagnostic and prognostic information on tumour development. Researchers at Purdue University have discovered a possible new pathway for anti-tumor drugs to kill cancer cells and proposed how to improve the design of tiny drug delivery particles for use in nanomedicine. The synthetic polymer micelles are drug delivery spheres 60 to 100 nanometers in diameter, or roughly 100 times smaller than a red blood cell. The spheres harbour drugs in their inner core and contain an outer shell made of a material called polyethylene glycol. Purdue researchers showed for the first time how this shell of polyethylene glycol latches onto the membranes of cancer cells, allowing fluorescent probes mimicking cancer drugs to enter the cancer cells. The researchers used an imaging technique called Forster Resonance Energy Transfer Imaging, or FRET, to make two key discoveries: how fluorescent molecules mimicking the cancer drug paclitaxel enter tumour cells and how the micelles break down in the blood before they have a chance to deliver the drug to cancer cells. The holy grail for transistor designers has been the requirement to be able to get high performance at reduced costs over very large substrate areas. Transistors on cheap and flexible substrates like glass and plastic are currently unable to deliver such performance and therefore do not lend themselves to seamless monolithic integration of increased electronic functions on human interface devices like displays and sensors. In a recent report, engineers proposed the use of clever transistor structure designs to overcome some of the issues with obtaining suitably low power and high speed operations in standard material systems. In the first collaborative work with Hitachi Central Research Laboratory in Japan, researchers at the Advanced Technology Institute of the University of Surrey have experimentally and theoretically demonstrated that for transistors of disordered silicon films, superior switching performance, that is, low leakage current and steep sub-threshold slope, can be achieved by making the conduction channel in the transistor very thin. As microchips shrink, even tiny defects in the lines, dots, and other shapes etched on them become major barriers to performance. Princeton engineers have now found a way to literally melt away such defects using a process that could dramatically improve chip quality without increasing fabrication cost. The method enables more precise shaping of microchip components than what's possible with current technology. More precise component shapes could help manufacturers build smaller and better microchips, the key to more powerful computers and other devices. The new method, termed self-perfection by liquefaction, achieves this by melting the structures on a chip momentarily and guiding the resulting flow of liquids so that it re-solidifies into the desired shapes. This is possible because natural forces acting on the molten structures, such as surface tension, the force that allows some insects to walk on water, smooths the structures into geometrically more accurate shapes. Lines, for instance, become straighter and dots become rounder. In this week's AzoNano interview, reporter Cameron Chai speaks to Colin Raston about work they're doing at the Centre for Strategic Nanofabrication, incorporating toxicology. Colin explains the rotating surface processing techniques they employ to produce nanoparticles with controlled size, properties and chemistries. In this interview, we also hear about their holistic approach, which encompasses completely sustainable processing to provide environmentally friendly materials.
This is Cameron Chai from AzoNano, and today I've got with me Professor Colin Raston from the Centre for Strategic Nanofabrication out of the University of Western Australia. How are you doing today, Colin?
Very well, thank you, Cameron.
So, the Centre for Strategic Nanofabrication, what do you guys do down there?
The main theme of the centre is the synthesis of nanoparticles, the application of nanoparticles. There are many applications of nanoparticles, but the operational theme of the centre is to incorporate issues of sustainability metrics into the centre, looking at making sure we're not causing problems downstream with the application. So that's the main focus of the centre.
And I was reading that you guys use what's called spinning disk processing to synthesize nanoparticles?
Well, the spinning disk processing, I mean, the important issue there, or the biggest, or one of the biggest issues in nanotechnology, often called the Holy Grail, is scaling up. Scalability is the biggest issue. So with this technology, we can actually fabricate nanoparticles in a very controlled way under continuous flow, so that ultimately the research react, if you can call it that, to make the nanoparticles can become the production reactor for an application.
And how exactly does the spinning disk process work?
Well, you're getting very technical now. So basically you have jet feeds focused or directed towards the centre of a disk, a rapidly rotating disk. So as the liquids mix under centrifugal forces, they move out away from the disk, and the processing of mixing gives you a very fine control over the particle size as the particles start to form. They run out of feed, so they're then locked into a specific size.
Now, what's the size range of the result nanoparticles are dependent on processing factors?
Well, this is one of the exciting applications in that you've got a lot of different parameters you can use to control the size, and you can get sizes down to 2 nanometers with 0.1 of a standard deviation of the size, and you can make them essentially as large as you like, but the trick is to get them below 100 nanometers, because that's where you change the function and the properties of the materials, and that's pretty well where the definition of nano sits, below 100 nanometers.
And what sort of materials have you been working with to date?
Well, we're certainly looking at silver nanoparticles, and we've recently published an article where we could show the technology could be used to make specific sizes very precisely. We can control the shape, and we can control the surface, and the size, shape and surface are actually big issues when you're looking at the toxicology or the toxicity of nanoparticles. But we also discovered you can change how the particles stick together in a controlled way to make bigger particles, and also to change how all the components come together, the so-called phase. You can change the phase of the material.
And
this is all under continuous flow.
And I also heard about another technology. It's a slight variation on the spinning disk. It's rotating surface processing.
Well, the spinning disk is a rotating surface. The problem may be that the time that the reactants are on the surface is typically less than a second. So you haven't got much control over that. But the new technology is to actually have a rotating tube, and that way you can control the time of the reactants in the tube for reactions that are much slower. So getting back to the other types of nanoparticles, we've actually looked at nutraceuticals and even making drug nanoparticles using this technology.
All right, and part of the centre's outlook is to have a completely holistic, environmentally friendly approach to producing nanoparticles as well as the nanoparticles themselves. What can you tell me about that?
Well, the title of the centre is actually the Centre for Strategic Nanofabrication Incorporating Toxicity, and that essentially means that we're looking at this holistically, that we're worried about the toxicology of the nanoparticles, the products, that's the nanotoxicology, but we're also worried about what reagents we're actually using. We try and avoid using toxic reagents. So this is a benign by design approach. Keep it simple. By doing this, we actually find the innovation goes up, so there's a big question, why wouldn't you want to do it anyway? But it's actually incorporating all the issues of sustainability at the inception of the science. I mean, the issue I have is, why go and make some nanomaterial if then you face the issue, well, you've used toxic reagents, you're not sure about the toxicology of the nanomaterial, and by the way, how are you going to scale it up? So if you go and put all these issues at the inception of the science, as best you can do under best practices, then you've got a product that is more likely to have downstream applications, and it's the sort of issues that industry likes to have actually incorporated if you wanted to talk to industry about your products and processes.
So basically everything you're trying to do and everything you're trying to produce is effectively environmentally friendly and has little, if any, side effect.
Well, I mean, one of the issues is, what are the metrics on sustainability? And that's an evolving science, and sustainability means different things to different people. But in my view, it's really the definition that will not compromise on the ability of future generations to meet their needs. So the best practice is, and in retrospect it can be obvious, that you don't use toxic reagents. There are alternatives, and this actually puts a higher level of innovation into the science, which makes it more challenging. And as a scientist, that's the way to go.
So in your view then, would you say that nanotechnology is something that we want to take forward in the future, and that if controlled in the right way, it should be safe for mankind and the environment?
Well, it's about risk, and at the end of the day, everything's got some element of risk, and you can minimise the risk by going down this path. I mean, who are the stakeholders? The stakeholders are obviously the industry, but there's the academic research, the government bodies, and then there's the community. And the big thing we have to address these days is, I guess, the community engagement. But in terms of getting the information to the community, they would certainly want to see best practices in terms of minimising risk and going down this path of putting the sustainability metrics into the science as you start up. I mean, another term that's often used is green chemistry, and that's about engaging science to solve the problems of sustainability. So in a way they're very similar. Green chemistry metrics and sustainability metrics, and keep it simple and so on.
And is there any research that you guys have done so far that you might like to tell us about that's had particular impact?
Well, we're a new centre. We started last year. Papers are now starting to roll out. We've published an article on the health implications of nanoparticles, and that's created a lot of interest. But in terms of the fabrication, the ability to precisely control the formation of nanoparticles is getting a lot of attention. One of the issues in terms of potential toxicology of nanoparticles is that if you don't have all the particles the same size, and they're different sizes which may have different toxicity, and an application, say in medicine, which may be good at a certain size, moving away from that size may in fact be toxic. So it's absolutely imperative that the technology actually moves down the path of being able to control the size. This minimises the likelihood of adverse effects.
All right, so your papers had had a fair bit of interest so far then?
Absolutely, and we're excited by this.
And that's the sort of work that you're moving forward with in the future, and you'll probably be publishing some more on that?
Well, we're moving forward very quickly, and we've got a lot of interest from industry, which is very encouraging, and a whole range of different products from associated with energy through to medical and the environment.
Excellent. Who would you like to be getting this message out to as far as who you guys can help?
Well, the message is to get out to industry. We're open for business. We're very strong on community engagement. We like to get involved in outreach programs on nanotechnology, the benefits, and getting into the debate about the benefits, but also to ensure that the risk is minimised in the process.
So you'd like to be involved with regulation and policy making with nanotechnology?
Well, I'm already involved in that through various organisations.
And what? How are you involved?
There's the Nanotechnology Advisory Group for NICNAS that's happening. And I mean, the important thing about nanotechnology is that the science just can't be done in isolation. These days, the scientists need to actually get out there and worry about and address the issues that concern us all, the environment and the effect of nanoparticles on human health.
All right then, Colin, sounds like you've got some fairly complete views there on nanotechnology and where it sits.
Well, I'm hard and fast on that, but it'll be back to work soon.
All right then, Colin, thanks very much for your time.
Well, thank you, Cameron.
AzoNano Business News. Voxtel Incorporated announces it has completed the negotiation of a long-term lease to occupy private development laboratories at the Oregon Nanoscience and Microtechnologies Institute, Laurie I. Loki Laboratories, located at the University of Oregon Eugene campus. The Integrative Science Center at the Laurie I. Loki Laboratories represents world-class facilities and infrastructure for scientific research. It provides Voxtel access to one of the world's largest and deepest collections of state-of-the-art equipment and technologies and provides Voxtel with a significant time and infrastructure advantage in the global race for innovation. Nanometrics Incorporated, a leading supplier of advanced process control metrology equipment, announced that it's acquired Tevet Process Control Technologies Limited through an all-cash asset purchase transaction. Tevet is an integrated metrology company serving the worldwide semiconductor and solar manufacturing industry. The acquisition of Tevet furthers Nanometrics' strategy to offer a breadth of process control metrology solutions that address both advanced technology as well as cost of ownership. DuPont and Dai Nippon Screen Manufacturing Co. Ltd. announced today their intention to form a strategic alliance to develop integrated manufacturing equipment for printed organic light-emitting diode displays. The companies have also signed an agreement relating to their intention to bring together the elements needed, materials, technology and equipment, to mass-produce OLED displays, delivering higher performance at a lower cost. OLEDs are displays in which pixels are created using thin films made of emissive organic materials. Compared with liquid crystal displays, OLEDs have a much higher contrast ratio, lower power consumption, because the pixels draw power only when they're in use, faster response time, and eliminate the need for the backlight and colour filter. LOT Oriel Limited has been appointed as agents for the Ambius XP Plus series of stylus profilers. Built on the success of the original XP profilers, the new XP Plus series stylus profilers are the result of 5 years of customer feedback and product innovation. The new XP Plus systems provide the widest range of application-specific capability. With a maximum 1.2 mm Z-range, sub-angstrom height equivalent noise, 5-angstrom step height repeatability, optional 50-nanometer encoded XY stages, 200mm long scan capability and many other features, the XP Plus series sets the new standard of excellence in the industry. Oxford Instruments Plasma Technology, part of Oxford Instruments PLC, a leading provider of high-technology tools and systems, has appointed Bernard Scanlon to the role of General Manager of the newly acquired Technologies and Devices International business in Maryland, USA. Bernard brings significant experience with him from his previous role as Operations Director at Oxford Instruments Nanoscience. He has successfully led and implemented a number of key business improvement activities that have consequently enabled the business to retain its premier market-leading position. BioForce Nanosciences Holdings Incorporated, a leader in systems integration at the micro and nanoscales to create products for the life sciences, is pleased to announce that European distributor Nano & More GmbH has completed the sale of a nano-enabler system at the Italian Institute of Technology in Genova. The instrument is scheduled to be installed in the Department of Neuroscience and Brain Technology, led by Professor Fabio Benfanati. That was AzoNano News for the week commencing the 12th of May 2008. If you have any nano courses, events or exhibitions you'd like to promote to a global nanotech audience, don't forget you can list them for free at azonano.com. To read expanded versions of the stories you've heard about in this podcast or to stay in touch with the world of nanotechnology, please visit www.azonano.com. If you'd like to send us feedback or let us know about nanotechnology news in your part of the world, please email us at podcast@azonano.com. I'm Stuart Cameron. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.
Yeah.